أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد والثناء لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المنتجبين، لا سيما بقية الله في العالمين، روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. اللهم كل وليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة، وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا، حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا. For the hastening and the return of our Imam, please recite a salawat.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
We're talking about Surah Al-Talaq, which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala begins the surah with saying, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، يا أيها النبي إذا طلقتم النساء فطلقوهن لعدتهن وأحصوا العدة. The surah focuses on the issue of talaq and divorce. The first seven verses, except for verse 3 and the end of verse 2, talks about an aspect of talaq, which is the iddah. And we said from that we came to the conclusion that in these verses, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is pointing to, with the rulings, the importance of marriage and preserving the marriage, and how problematic it is to lead to separation and divorce. Quite contrary to what is happening out here in the West in general, and in the Muslim community as well, which we see a lot of divorce, unfortunately. It's not supposed to be like that. Now, we talked about a few different issues, but we ended up with, Shari Salawat, please.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Was to talk about what should be done in a marriage, starting a marriage, to prevent it from leading to the separation, when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala considers it so important for the marriage to preserve, or for us to preserve that marriage, not separate, not divorce, then we've got to look at some of the measures that are important that Islam talks about, the Holy Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt talked about, to preserve this constitution, which is very sacred. That Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala considers constitution, this institution of marriage, as one of His ayat, one of His signs. What is that? What should we do? We started to talk about this idea of compatibility. That is an issue. When people want to get married, one of the things that you hear is this issue of compatibility. And when we talk, we always know, yeah, you know, don't tell me. I've already heard it 50 billion times that the person has got to be religious. You need to take into consideration that factor as well. Okay. Everybody's heard that. But practically, what we see is there's other factors that are considered a lot more important, I think I can say. And religiosity is not considered as important. And the other thing is, what in the world is religiosity? What do we mean by that? Some of the comments that we hear is that, okay, if you, because last night we insisted on this in some of the ahadith that we read to you, and inshallah I'll repeat them tonight, is that the only, this is how we put it last night, the only criterion that the Ahlul Bayt and the Holy Prophet has given can be summarized as taqwa and religiosity. If you're okay with the religion of the person, then that's, you've got the reason we had in the hadith last night, where when Ali ibn Asbat was asking Imam al-Jawad apparently about marrying his daughters to people, and he said, I can't find people that are like myself. The Imam says, إِذَا جَاءَكُمْ مَنْ تَرْضَوْنَ خُلْقَهُ وَدِينَهُ فَزَوِّجُوهُ. If someone comes and asks for your daughter, and you are pleased with their behavior, their khulq, and their religion, and we explained last night that it's like emphasizing a particular part of religion. Otherwise, khulq is not outside of religion. We mentioned this, and I think, I don't know if it was the question and answer last night or when it was. Okay. A lot of the issues that we consider as akhlaq, and we think, you know, they're recommended or it's better to do, a lot of it is no, it's actually part of the wajibat or the muharramat. We can't do certain things. We cannot hurt someone. We cannot aggravate someone. Even if it's not physical abuse, we cannot do that. Whether it's our wife, whether it's our husband, whether it's a friend, doesn't matter who it is, as long as they are believers, we're not allowed to do that. It's one of the muharramat. Okay. So the khulq, the behavior of the person, is part of their religiosity. So when the Imam says, when you're pleased with their khulq and with their religion, فَزَوَّجُوا, it's like saying, when you're pleased with their religion, then go ahead. And then, not only does the Imam say, that's good, go ahead with it, he brings this verse of the Holy Quran, which is kind of scary. He says, إِلَّا تَفَعَلُوهَ تَكُنْ فِتْنَةٌ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَفَسَادٌ كَبِيرٌ. If you don't do that, there is going to be corruption, great corruption that is going to be spreading throughout the universe. There's two aspects of this. One of them I started with last night, and I'm going to continue with tonight. But before that, this last part of it, and the idea that as soon as someone like that comes, then have your daughters married. Okay. I want to come to this topic, which is also related to divorce and preventing that. And that is marriage in an earlier age. Marriage is not something that is supposed to happen while one is 30 or 26, or that's not the age. It's supposed to be earlier. Okay. I don't know why. Somebody's asking about somebody's dad being here. Okay. I don't know why, okay, when we're looking at our examples and our role models, we pick the wrong ones for the wrong time, okay. You look at, instead of looking at like Amir al-Mu'mineen, the rest of the Imams, or even like Imam al-Jawad, Salamullah alayh, that we were quoting in this hadith, Imam al-Jawad, you know, he was the youngest imam to reach imamah. He was, if not the youngest, I think he was the youngest, but if not the youngest, one of the youngest who was assassinated and murdered. Okay, he got married very young as well. Okay, very young. Now, instead of looking at this imam, Imam al-Jawad, we say, oh, the Prophet got married at what age? What's the age the Prophet got married at? 25. Even that's late. You look at the other Ahlul Bayt, the Imams, that's not the age that they used to get married at. pushing this idea forward that, okay, let the people go through their studies and then get married. It's not wise to get married before that. That's not the Islamic perspective on it. Very clearly, it's not the Islamic perspective on the issue. Okay. There's a reason why physical and mental maturity happen at an earlier age. There's a reason behind it. It's not that there's supposed to be physical maturity for marriage, and then 10, 15 years after that, a person gets married. That's not supposed to happen like that. I don't want to go over the scary hadith about the age. Okay. But that's something serious. This is a very, very wrong perception we have. One of the reasons why marriages end in problems is people getting married a little too late. Okay, because the older you are, the more you're comfortable living your own individual life. And it's easy, it's more difficult to compromise and learn to live with somebody else. Okay. Not saying it's impossible. Well, there's plenty of good examples there as well. But one of the things that causes this issue, and if we want to get married later on, we've got to make sure we are extra careful, is this idea. We cannot, it's more difficult to begin to live with somebody else and live as a family now instead of as an individual. The earlier, the better. Okay. And families can facilitate that. I don't agree with people who say that people, you know, this, the sons and daughters cannot study if they get married. No, actually, if we help them, we're helping them out anyway. We're buying them nice cars, and you know, they're going out, they're spending a lot of money, and they're doing a lot of things that they're not supposed to. Okay, and there's a lot of distractions as well. These are facts. Instead of pushing the idea that, okay, let them, you know, tough it out, get into a lot of problems, a lot of distractions, and not let them get married while they're studying. Instead of that, have them, you can have them married, and you can facilitate and help them out with life during that time where they are studying, and gradually they can find their feet. So I don't want to spend too much time on this, but remember, it's not a good idea to postpone marriage. It is not. The earlier, the better. There's a list of scary hadith that I don't want to get into.
It's okay, Bill.
Inshallah, some other night. Recite a salawat, please.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
I'm barely alive right here, you know, sitting as it is. Tonight, inshallah, maybe some other night. So that's one thing that we can understand from this hadith. Okay, when people come, when there's proposals, okay, don't keep delaying it and saying, no, let's maybe somebody, maybe this, maybe that, later on, it's too early, and things like that. Don't do that. Because I know plenty, especially because this hadith is talking to parents, okay, to the fathers. I know, you know, plenty of sisters that were religious, they did something like that, they postponed it, and now they are 25, 26, 27, 30 even, and now it's very difficult to find a husband. Okay, it's very difficult because guys are looking at younger people, right? That's a fact. Other than that, going back to the religiosity, what do we mean by that? And how is this such an important thing? I said this is the only criterion. Okay, what do we mean by it being the only criterion? If this is the only criterion, then why is it we see religious people getting married, the very religious people, we know them as being like the most religious people we know, and they get married and a few months down the line or a year or two, then there's issues. What happens there? Religiosity, what we mean by that, the most important part of it, the most important part, is submitting to the religion, submission to religion. What does that mean? Obviously, we're not ma'asum. We're not ma'asum. What we mean by religious, be making sure the person is religious, is not that make sure the guy has a beard and he's praying and he's... That's not necessarily it. And the way we look at someone to see if they're religious or not are these factors. Okay, if the guy has a beard, then maybe, you know, he's probably considered a little more religious. The only thing we kind of look at for sisters is the hijab. If they have a decent hijab, then that's it. Well, hijab is very important, but that's not the only thing. Okay, it's not the only thing. For the guys, beard is not the only thing, okay? The important thing is being able to and wanting to submit to the laws of religion, no matter what they are. This is extremely important. If we can get someone like that, or if we can, you know, try to be that ourselves, okay? Because a lot of times we're not. A lot of times we have our own biases. We don't want to accept whatever religion says. We hear it from the different sources, like, yeah, but... There's a lot of that, yeah, but, in our communities about, you know, submitting to the religion. We're not willing to accept. That is the principle. How is this going to be so important? In the explanation that I will give, inshallah, I think some of the aspects of religiosity would become more clear. What happens is when you want to live together as a family, more than one person coming together, okay, you need to have common elements. If there's no common ground, obviously that is not going to work. If there's no common ground, that marriage is not going to work. What is that common ground going to be? Let's look at some of the things. Some of the common grounds that we commonly look for is being from the same cultural background. Okay, a lot of us think that that is very good. You know, if you have that, then that is a common ground that we can live together based on. We're both from Iran, or we're both from Pakistan, or we're both from Iraq, or we're both from Lebanon, or whatever. We can understand one another better because of the background we come from. Okay. How strong of a common element is that? Okay. How much is that going to help us? I mean, what are these? What's the common grounds there? Okay. What is this background all about? Just have an understanding about doing certain things. And then when it comes to, you know, those very cultural issues, then every city from those cultures, they have their own little way of doing it. Then they're going to be fighting about, you know, how to do things. Right from the beginning about your marriage and how you're going to carry out and have that marriage. You know, these guys, like the wife's side of the family, they're from this village or from this city or from this family. This is how they do it. And the husband's family is from another part, and that's how they do it. And that's not going to be something that we can really work with. There has to be common elements that we agree on. If you don't have any common grounds, then you're not going to have a union. Marriage is a union. The best thing to unite on are the divine laws and the divine teachings. Now, why don't we get... I think it's pretty simple. It's pretty logical. Right? Who else are we going to refer to? He is the one that has created us. He knows us. He knows how I am created as a man. He knows how the wife is created as a woman. How that relationship is going to work, it is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala who can tell us how that exactly is going to work. If we are able to come together on these common elements, our problems are going to be resolved. If we submit to it. Because a lot of times when people come to us and they're talking about their family issues and problems that have come up, it's interesting that, you know, they're very religious people too. As I said, you see them to be very religious. They're probably sometimes some of the very active youth brothers and sisters in communities. And they come over and they start talking about their issues. And then when you come to a conclusion, you say, okay, well, you know what? This is the problem. Your behavior is the problem. You're not supposed to behave in this particular way because Islam says this is how you're supposed to behave. Like, yeah, but I can't do it. Yeah, but I can't do it. This happens a lot. Look for someone that is willing to submit. Whatever it may be, even if the practices are not completely and 100% valid, whatever they're doing. Okay. The other side of it, when we talk about religiosity, people, sometimes go to an extreme. And I think, I don't know if it was here the question was asked or where we were discussing this. They asked, you know, shouldn't we be looking for someone at the same level of religiosity or even above us? And people have like I don't know what they think about themselves and how religious they are. But this is an issue. Okay. We go to an extreme. Nobody is religious. Like, we have to have one of the imams to be considered religious. We need to have like the Lady Maryam or Fatima al-Zahra. Anything less than that is not going to be religious. Okay. We go to an extreme. If they're, for example, if they're wearing makeup, then that's not going to work at all. If they have, you know, a little bit of problems with their hijab, or I know their background, or I know they listen to this, or, okay, you know, if you want to have something that is absolutely perfect, you're probably not going to find it, okay? A lot of times we have misunderstandings about religion. It's not like I don't want to practice sometimes. One is not able to control themselves. The nafs is strong. Sometimes there's a lack of understanding. They've been taught, they've been told differently about Islam. Otherwise, they're trying to practice the religion. Okay. So the important isn't necessarily finding everything that they do being in accordance to Islam. Okay. You have to get the impression that this person is trying to practice the religion. They have accepted that whatever God says is the right thing. Now, sometimes I may slip, but I do accept it's my fault. It's my problem. You know, I'm not supposed to do that. And I may have a certain understanding. I may be told that this is what religion is. But if I realize that that understanding is wrong, I'm willing to change. Because I realize whatever He says is the right thing. You should be looking for that. If we look for that, then when it comes to marriage, when we get involved with the marriage, we will have a lot less problems. And there's always a solution. Because then it's not about what I say or what you say. I think it should be done like this. No, it should be done like that. Why does it always have to be your word? And the guy always sees it as always following what she says, and she always sees it always being the guy's way. If you try to find someone that, you know, what's important to them, and always make this the standard in your life. If we do that, we're going to have a much, much better life. Much better life. Recite salawat, please.
Allah.
I think I've stressed enough on this religiosity, and what I mean by it is being and submitting to the religion. Okay. Submitting to whatever Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said. And trying to figure out what that is. That is a very important element. People could look religious. They practice certain parts of the religion. But when it comes to submitting to whatever religion says, you find them having certain issues. They're not willing to accept whatever the religion says. Then no, that's not going to work. A lot of the people that you say look religious, they were very religious, but then they got married, they had issues. A lot of the ones that I've been involved with, it usually comes down to this. When you pinpoint and say, okay, this is the problem, it's the way you are interacting in this marriage that is creating a problem. You are not fulfilling your responsibilities. You're going beyond your rights and so on and so forth. They're not willing to accept it. Okay, they're not willing to accept that they need to fix their behavior. This was all about what to do, what some of the teachings that we have, the most important one, as I said, in regards to getting married, okay, the compatibility issue. We said, the hadith says, al-mu'min kufu al-mu'min. Okay, a believer is compatible with another believer. If we actually believe, we accept that whatever he says is the right thing, then we're going to be compatible and we'll be a good match for a potential spouse that is also like that. Then when we get engaged in the marriage itself, okay, this is where a lot of times problems arise. Okay, sometimes people, and I said this before too, sometimes we think that it's always about that first decision, and after a couple of months, people start to doubt. They start to have questions. Was that the right decision to make? I'm not sure anymore. It wasn't supposed to be like this. You get involved with arguments, debates. You're laid off of work, then you're in the house a little too long. And life is not working out. Was that the right decision? Okay. The way we live our life after marriage is extremely important. A lot of times what happens and what I see is people, you know, do a lot to make sure the person is religious and all of that. But then when they get involved with marriage, they themselves and their spouse, they're not willing to implement religion in their relationship. Well, that was the whole point. I'm not talking about what I'm focusing on here and saying that they need to be religious for is the whole compatibility issue. In terms of practicing like prayer and fasting, going to Hajj and things like that, all right, whether one is in a successful marriage or they're not, inshallah, they should be practicing that. But the point is that religion is going to help that relationship. There's guidelines that Islam gives us in that relationship. That if we practice that, we're going to have a very healthy relationship. If we don't, either somebody's getting hurt there or it's not going to work out. Practicing what Islam says in that relationship is extremely important. Extremely important. Every single one of those rulings that Islam has in the relationship, where it puts its foot down and says, look, this is a must, it is a wajib, this is a responsibility on you. Or it says, look, that's as far as you have a right. Okay, your rights don't go beyond that. And it insists on that, there's a reason behind it. But unfortunately, we don't even look into that. We just go with whatever we've been fed about religion, the way we usually live our lives, and we think that's going to be okay and it's going to be working out. And that's how religion probably teaches us, because that's how, you know, everybody in the community and culture, this is how It works. You know, this is how the marriage works. Recite a salawat, please.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when He talks about the institution of marriage in the Holy Quran, as I said, He mentions it at the in one of the verses to be a sign of Allah, an ayah of Allah. At the end of that, He says, وَجَعَلَ بَيْنَكُمْ مَوَدَّةً وَرَحْمَةً. Okay. He puts initial love and affection and mercy between the spouses. Okay. You can always see that. The first couple few months, usually they're sweethearts. Okay. They can't live without one another. Okay. And after the first few months, then the romance is gone and they can't live with one another. Okay. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala puts that in husband and wife. Okay. That's how it works. But just like any other blessing that is put into us, the spiritual feelings is something that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala puts into us. But to maintain that, to benefit from that, it's up to us. Our actions could move us away from that. Or, if we do as He says, it's going to become stronger. So this love and affection and mercy is the same way. He initially gives it to us. If we do as He says, okay, that love is going to multiply. And after 10 years and 15 years and 20 years, until you see these couples, they still seem like lovebirds, although they've been together for such a long time. Some of the very pious people that are pious not just when it comes to prayer and keeping a beard or wearing the hijab and things like that, but they're pious in their relationship. They implement what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said there. It's been 15, 20 years, okay? And you see a very, very, very close relationship. All the elements, okay? All the elements of that relationship are important. A lot of times we don't pay attention to that. I don't want to spend tonight going over some of those. And I don't know if I will at all. I only have a couple more nights left here. But I'll just refer you to the risalas, to know what those rights and responsibilities are. Base your marriage on those rights and responsibilities. Your expectations should not exceed your rights. And you should be more worried about your responsibilities, not your rights. Because rights can always be given up, but responsibilities can't be given up.
Salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali.
You'll be held responsible for that. So you got to make sure you carry out your responsibilities. But you want to make sure you don't go beyond your rights. Expect someone to do something beyond what they're supposed to. And this happens a lot in marriages. Expectation is the beginning of frustration. When you have an expectation, the other party doesn't feel like they want to fulfill that expectation, or a lot of times they don't, that's going to frustrate you. Let's make sure our expectations do not exceed what our rights are. And if we do that, if the foundation of our relationship is based on what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, it's going to move away from being driven by selfishness. Okay. It's going to be moving towards becoming more selfless. One would like to, they would enjoy as serving Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to help the other party as much as they can. There's a Interesting story about Amir al-Mu'mineen Salamullah alayhi, who is Imam al-Muttaqeen. Okay, we gotta learn these things. Now, this is one of those points about the brothers, but there's still more to come. This is not the main one we're trying to. One of the wrong expectations that usually I've seen men having is the expectation for things to happen in the house the way they want it. This is an expectation that exists. I've seen most men being like that. Rarely I have seen that is not the case. Expectation of doing things in the first place, and then expectation of doing them the way he wants it done. This is not an expectation that's based on the rights that a husband has. The husband does not have the right to expect things done in the house from their wife. They don't have this, the right. Okay. And the wife is not responsible for that. Don't have that expectation. It's recommended for her. It's like Salatul Layl, if she does it, it's going to be she's going to be gaining more and more rewards if she does it for Allah. Okay. But it's not a responsibility. So don't expect it. Take that as a favor. Okay. That means that you don't sit around in the house and just let her do things. When you come back from work, oh, I'm tired, you know, I can't do anything. Amir al-Mu'mineen Salamullah alayhi. Now, I don't think during the time of the lifespan of the Lady Fatima al-Zahra Salamullah alayha. He was very busy. It's the time of, you know, they're in Medina. There's a lot of battles. There's a lot of activities outside the house. A lot of times he's not home. So he's got a lot on his plate. Okay. But when he would come home, he would quickly get involved with the activities of the house. Even to the extent of cleaning lentils and, you know, things like that for food. Whatever, okay, whatever he can help with as soon as he comes back home. Not that, okay, work is outside, we'll come back home, okay, you know, somebody take off my socks. It's not supposed to be like that. Okay, it's not supposed to be like that. We're supposed to be... This is on one hand. On the other hand, learning from the Lady Fatima al-Zahra salamullah alayha. As we said, it's not a responsibility. Okay, it's not a responsibility. The guy should not have the expectation. But for the sister, being part of this family, helping out, she should consider this a worship. It's good to do, trying to help out in the house in any way that they can. It's good for them. Instead of fighting over what I'm not supposed to do, and that's your responsibility, and, you know, I want to do what I want. I want to have my own time. Both sides, you know, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. You got to do it. And fighting over that. Instead of that, Islam tells us, if we practice, first of all, the teachings, then the wajib, I meant, the wajib and the haram, the expectations, then beyond that, it always teaches us, no, try to help the other person. Instead of being worried about, I want to make sure none of my rights are violated. No, let me make sure that I help the other, you enjoy that. And if both parties work like that, both spouses, husband and wife, are trying to, their goal is to please Allah by helping their spouse. Just to, that family is going to work so much better than if we're just worried about our selfish desires and trying to figure out, okay, where's my right? And I want to make sure I have my right. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we'll continue the topic inshallah tomorrow night. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on this blessed night of the month of Ramadan that He blesses us with more of the understanding of his verses and his teachings. And we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to help us be able to submit to his teachings as well. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to hasten the return of our imam. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to become his close companions. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to prolong the life of and give good health to all of our maraja and especially the leader. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to prolong the life of and give good health to all those who are helping the cause of Islam. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the remainder of this month to forgive us all of the sins that we have committed. We ask Him to help us stay away from those sins. We ask Him to forgive our parents and all those who have taught us a word in Islam of their sins. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to relieve all people of the hardships they're facing, especially the people of Pakistan in the flood. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to relieve all those who are facing oppression in any part of the world, especially the believers. بالنبي وعليه رحمه الله من قرأ الفاتحة مع الصلوات